Hi everyone, thank you all for joining me. My name is Haki Benita. I was here last year in the Python Dev Room in FOSDEM and I had a great time, so I wanted to come back. Last year I talked about typing, and this year I want to talk about concurrency in web applications. So just to quickly introduce myself, my name is Haki Benita, and I work and I read and I write a lot about Python and Django, web development, performance, databases, SQL, and so on and so on. So to start talking about concurrency in web applications, we need to have some kind of web application so we can talk about. So I picked a simple type of project that I like to use for demonstrations, and that's a URL shortener system. Hopefully, some of you are already familiar with what a URL shortener is, but if you're not, then a URL shortener is a simple system that provides a unique short URL that redirects to a long URL. This in itself is useful when you need to include links in text-constrained places like SMS messages and tweets. And another benefit of URL shortener systems is usually that they provide some level of analytics. Most notably, they can keep track of the number of clicks on each short URL. So some URL shorteners that you may be familiar with are Beatly, TCO, GoogGL, if it still exists, and so on. So throughout this talk, I'm going to present code that is using the Django ORM, but this talk is not related to Django. I'm just using it to demonstrate common, I would say, mistakes and issues with concurrency. Anything that you see in this presentation applies to any other framework that you might be using, any other ORM that you might be using. Heck, it spans even beyond just Python, okay? So let's get started with a Django model. Django model is the corresponds to a table in the database, and each field corresponds to a column. So we have a short URL model, and we have the key. The key is the short unique part of the URL that uniquely identifies the short URL, and it's unique and we try to keep it short. And we have the long URL to redirect to, and we have a head counter, an integer to keep track of the number of clicks. So the first thing that we want to try and implement into our system is a function to create a new short URL. An IDE implementation, or a simple implementation, may look something like this. You generate a list of possible characters to choose from, and then to generate your random key, you use random choices and you pick five choices from the possible characters. In this case, we picked ASCII letters, which is lower and uppercase English letters, and digits 0 through 9. And we pick 5, we join them together, and we have a unique, hopefully unique and random key. And with that key, we create a short URL, okay? So at this point, I'm sure that maybe 90% of developers will stop and just go on with the day without even noticing that something may be wrong. But hopefully by the end of this talk, you're going to be one of the 10% that take it a step further. So the first mistake when talking about concurrency is to even fail to recognize that there is a possible collision in functions such as this one. Let's see what it looks like. So in our function, when we create the random key and then take that key and try to create a short URL, what if the key already exists? Let me remind you, this is a key that we generate randomly. So it's entirely possible that this specific random key already exists in the table. So in order to overcome this problem, some of you may think that they should try and check in advance if the key exists in the database. So this is probably what it's going to look like. You add some kind of loop to generate random keys, and then inside the loop, you check if the key already exists. And as long as the key exists, you just keep going until you reach a key that does not exist. You break out of the loop and create the short URL with the key that is hopefully does not exist in the table, right? So is this okay? Can we stop right here and call it a day? Well, the truth is that no. It's actually a bit more complicated than that. And let's see why, okay? So to understand how this simple function can go wrong, we need to talk about concurrency, okay? So if you look up concurrency in the dictionary, you probably won't find it. But if you look for concurrent, you're going to find this definition. So concurrent is when things are happening at the same time or operating or occurring at the same time. So let's ask ourselves, what will happen in this function if two separate processes will execute it at the same exact time, okay? Which leads me to the next common mistake, which is time of check, time of use. And let's see what it means. So when you have two processes that execute this function at the same time, we need to keep track of where they are using the database. So in this case, we have this part inside the loop that checks if the key already exists. We are going to call this time of check, okay? And then we have the time of use, which is where we take that key that we check and we use that to create the short URL, okay? Now, between the time of check and the time of use, it's possible that another process did the exact same thing and found that a similar key already exists. And this can cause a collision. Let's see what it looks like. Let's say that the first process produced this random key, okay? And then you went onto the database and checked if the key exists. He found that this key does not exist, okay? Now this is process number one. Another process, process number two, does the exact same thing. Process number two also managed to magically produce the exact same key. And he also went to the database to check if this key exists. He also found that this key does not exist. And then he went on to use this key to create a short URL right here. So in this point in time, the short URL is created with this key. Now back to process one. Process one, after checking the key, moves on to creating the short URL with the exact same key, and boom, this key already exists. Okay, and this is the time of check, time of use problem. So when we have this type of problems, usually our minds automatically goes to locks, right? So if we have a problem with two processes trying to do something at the same time, we immediately think that the solution is locks. So let's pursue this and see what a solution with locks look like. Okay? So why are we immediately thinking about locks? Because we want to make sure that we are the only one that is accessing a specific resource at a time. But the next question is, where should I obtain this lock from? To answer this question, we need to look at how web applications are usually built. So an architecture of a simple web application, and it doesn't matter if you are running WSGI, ASGI, some kind of event loop, it doesn't matter. But let's say for the sake of discussion that you have some process in a server that is interacting with a database, okay? So if you have a locking problem that you want to solve, you might think that you can somehow resolve this issue by locking at the process level, right? But what happens when you have multiple processes running on the same server? So this is, for example, the case if you have a Django project running with more than one worker process. So if you have multiple processes running on the same server, you might think, okay, So I might be able to solve this somehow at the operating system level, maybe at the server level, but what if you have multiple servers? So now you can't solve this at the process level. You can't solve it at the operating system level or the server level. So now you might think, okay, maybe I can craft some magical solution that will solve this at the application level. Maybe I can coordinate all of these events and servers and obtain some kind of lock. But then what if you have several applications, different applications accessing the same data? Okay, so this becomes a problem, but hopefully by now you understand what I'm trying to get at. If you have multiple processes, multiple servers, and multiple applications all trying to access the database, then the right place to obtain the lock is the database. So now that we understand that we need to obtain a lock in the database, the next question is, what should we lock? Remember, we are trying to create a new short URL. So there is nothing that we can actually lock because there is no resource. We are trying to create this resource. So the only thing left to lock in this case is the entire table. Let's see what it looks like. If we change our implementation to use a lock, then the first thing we need to do is we need to open a database transaction. This is what it looks like in Django. You use transaction atomic and the database will create a begin and either commit or rollback block in the database. So this is a database transaction. And next, the Django ORM does not provide any functions for locking a table. So we need to use raw SQL. For that, we create a cursor and execute this SQL statement to lock the table, the entire table short URL in exclusive mode. Now, if we manage to obtain this lock within the transaction, we can be sure that this code is executed only by us. So there is no other process at the moment that can execute or interact with or obtain this lock on the table until we are done. Okay? So the advantage of this approach is that there is no took-two problem anymore because nobody can access this resource between the time of check and the time of use because we locked access to the resource by locking the table. However, since we locked everybody else out of this process, then concurrent processes cannot exist, which means they are all forced to wait. Because they are all forced to wait, this can get pretty slow. So there are other approaches that does not involve locks. And I want to present now a solution that I call ask for forgiveness. Okay. So what does it mean to ask for forgiveness? If you look up the Python glossary, you're going to find this saying, easier to ask for forgiveness than permission. The glossary also continues in saying to say that this is a common Python coding style that is characterized by the presence of many try and accept statements. Okay, so let's see what it looks like in practice. Now, before we look at the code, let's go back to the model and take a closer look at the key field, okay? So remember that we said that the key is unique. When we provide this unique equals true to the field, the ORM will go and create a unique constraint in the database. This means that the database is already enforcing a unique constraint on the field. So if we try to create a short URL with a key that already exists, the database is going to throw an error at us. So if the database is already enforcing the unique constraint, why not rely on it? Okay? Now we can go back to the function and try to rewrite it, but this time, instead of checking in advance, we are going to try and create the short URL and then handle the exception in case this key already exists. So this is what it looks like. Once again, we have this while true loop. We produce a random key, and then we try to create the short URL with the key we just generated. And if this key does not exist, the database is validating this, verifying this, then all good. We can just return the object and the function is done. However, if the key already exists, we are going to get an integrity error or a unique constraint violation in the database that translates to an integrity error in this case, SciCapG. Okay? And then in this case, we can just continue and try once again to generate a random key and try again. So the benefit of this approach is A, there is no lock, right? Because we just delegated the check to the database and we didn't lock any resource. Second, there is no took two problem because we don't perform any check. The database is doing it for us. And this principle of asking for forgiveness is considered more Pythonic. And I don't know if you noticed, but there are less round trips to the database. Previously, we had to check and then issue another statement to create the short URL. Now, if there are no duplicates, which is the common case, we are only executing one insert statement into the table. So it's a bit more efficient. Okay, so now that we have URL created and we managed to avoid collisions and locks, we can move on to the next task, which is to increment the hit counter. Now, let me remind you, when we resolve a short URL to a long URL, we want to increment the counter. We want to count how many times we redirected the short URL to the long URL. So for that, we can implement a function called resolve. This function receives the key as an argument and is expected to return the short URL if this key is found or none otherwise. So we start by trying to fetch a short URL with this key. If it's not found, we return none. And then if it is found, we increment the hit counter, save this to the database, and return the object. So now we are a bit smarter than we were at the beginning of the talk. So we look at this function and we ask ourselves, how will this function behave with many concurrent processes? How will this function behave when we have multiple processes executing it at the same time? Which leads me to the next common mistake, which is race conditions. So let's see what a race condition looks like in this case. So the first process selects the row from the database. And at this point, the hit counter is zero. Now, at the same time, a second process is also executing the same function for the same key, and he fetches the data, the row from the table. And at this point, the hit counter is still zero, right? So now process number one wants to increment the counter. The current counter is zero. So incremented by one, it updates the hit count to one and saves it to the database. At the same time, process number two also sees that the object has zero hit counts and increments by one and issue an update statement to update the hit counter to one. So we resolved this URL twice, but when these two processes completed, the hit count is one when it should be two. So this is what a race condition looks like. In this case, we have an incorrect hit count. So if you want to see where this can happen in the code, so now we have this statement that fetched the data into memory, and this is where the problem happens because we are updating the counter based on what we have in memory, okay? This is what the SQL looks like. You can see that we first fetch the object, and then we update the hit count to an absolute number. So when two of these are executed at the same time, we get a counter that is out of sync. So once again, when we have a problem with two processes racing for the same resource, our mind immediately goes to locking. But the difference now is that before we didn't have anything to lock, but this time there is something that we can lock. We have a row in the database that contains this short URL. So this is where select for update comes in handy. Select for update allows you to lock a specific row or select this row with the intent of updating it. So if you want to check out the documentation, you have this link here, but the important part is that other transactions that attempt to select for update of a specific row will be blocked until the current transaction ends. So this is very similar to the lock that we saw before, but this time we are locking a specific row. So we are selecting a row with the intent of updating it. So we obtain the lock on the row. This is what it looks like. Once again, because we want to obtain a lock, we need to execute or obtain this lock inside a database transaction. And now we fetch the object in the same way by key, but this time we also add select for update, meaning that we want to select the row with the intent of updating it. So this actually obtains a lock on the row. I'm going to show you the SQL in a minute so you can adapt this to whatever ORM you are using. And once we manage to obtain a lock on this row, we can safely increment the counter based on the data that we got and save this to the database, and we are done. This is what the SQL looks like. You can see that we opened a database transaction. We selected the row by key, but we selected it for update, meaning we want to update this row. Then we updated the head counter for this short URL and committed the changes. So once we manage to obtain a lock on the row, there is no other process that can obtain a lock on this row until we are done with the transaction. Okay, so this is how select for update solved this problem. So the if you want to see what it looks like as opposed to the previous scenario, then once process one select the row for update, the hit counter is zero and is locking the row. Now when process two tries to do the same, he is forced to wait. Okay, so process one can finish, increment the counter to one, and then the lock is released, and process two gets an updated view of the row with a hit counter of one and can safely increase the counter to two. And this is how we solve the problem. So the advantage of this approach is that you have an accurate counter, but just like the previous locking solution that we came up with, other processes are forced to wait until I'm done. So this can be slow. If you think about it, this is even worse than the previous solution because resolving a URL is much more common than creating new ones, okay? So we really want to be, we really want to try and avoid the lock in this case. So another approach, just like before, would be to delegate this to the database. So another solution is to, in Django, this is called an F expression, but what's behind this is instead of updating the counter based on the view that we have in memory, we just tell the database to increment the counter relative to what he has stored in the database. This is what it looks like. And to understand what it does, we need to look at the SQL. So now we select the row. And when we update to hits equal hits plus one. So no matter what head count we got in memory, we are going to increment relative to what the database has stored at the moment. So the advantage of this approach is that A, there are no locks because we are just incrementing in the database. We also get an accurate counter. It cannot go out of sync because we are not updating an absolute number. We are updating relative to what is stored in the database. Since we are not obtaining any locks on the row, other processes can operate concurrently, so it should be faster. But the downside to this approach is that the object that we are returning does not contain the latest accurate counter, right? Because our memory view is no longer in sync with what is in the database. For that, I want to show you a nice little trick, mostly an SQL trick, and it's called update and immediately return. So the update clause, I know that this is true for PostgreSQL and probably other databases. You can actually return the results of an update statement, meaning I can update the short URL table increment compared relative to what's stored in the database for a given key and tell the database that I want the updated row after the update statement. Okay. So with this approach, using the returning clause in SQL, there are no locks. We have an accurate counter. other processes don't need to wait because there is no lock. And you also have the latest accurate counter, okay? The disadvantage specifically for Django is that there is no built-in support for returning, but this might not be an issue if the ORM you're using does. So the last mistake I want to talk about, and I'm going to finish in like a minute, is underestimating the chances of concurrency issues, okay? So I know that usually when we talk about the chances of things happening at the same time, we usually go to probabilities and start thinking, so there's like a bazillion options, and what are the chances that exactly two things will happen at the exact same time? So first of all, I want you to keep in mind that the load on system is usually not evenly distributed. If you think about it, for example, a payroll system as experiencing a peak at the beginning of the month. If you are an e-commerce shop, you might experience more load during Black Friday and so on and so on. So when you do these probabilities, you usually get an underestimation of the actual chances of concurrency. The second thing that you need to keep in mind is that there's this little thing called the Murphy's Law, which I'm sure that every developer that ever worked on a production system is very, very familiar with. And that's that everything that can go wrong will go wrong. And not only that it will go wrong, it will go wrong on the weekend when you are on vacation with your family and you have no laptop and you just ran out of battery in your phone. This is when you're going to get the alert that some collision happened and the counters are out of sync. So my suggestion to you, better safe than sorry. So this is a quick recap of the problems and solutions that we talked about. And these are the takeaways that I want you to take from this talk. First, remember, you are not alone. The first step towards any type of solution is to be aware. So now you know that you are not alone and there are other concurrent processes out there. So think about that. Second, don't let probabilities distract you. Murphy is out there and he's out to get you. Things are going to get wrong. So better safe than sorry. Just handle it. And finally, we saw a lot of ways to avoid locks. I know that concurrency problems usually immediately froze you to using locks. So we saw many different ways to avoid locks. So pick one. And if it fits your needs, just use it. And that's it. I was Haki Benita. You can check out my stuff in hakibenita.com. I'm pretty active on Twitter, so you can find me with this handle. You can subscribe to my newsletter and you can email me in this address. So thank you very much. See you in the Q&A. See you in the hallway. Go faster.
Questions to answer.
Really? Many questions answered.
Many were answered.
Yeah.
All right.